Astro Dave, David Renicky. Check out davidrenicky.com. Great website, but the man himself is even better, and he joins me. David, hello.
Happy autumn equinox there, Vilko.
Yes, that's. Does that mean with the autumn equinox, the days are now getting shorter?
Well, they're actually the same, mate. They're equal, you know, and it just means that it's the official start of autumn.
Right.
Right here, in the southern hemisphere, that is, with the sun rising almost due east, setting virtually due west. Now, of course, in the northern hemisphere, that marks the arrival of the first day of spring. And over the next few months, you'll notice the sun's going to rise in a different position from your home that you normally see. Maybe it's coming up over a tree or a building.
Well, I've noticed it in the afternoon at the gym. I've got to move the exercise bike a little bit further down because I'm getting where I used to be was in shadow, and now I'm getting full sunblast in the afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's because, you know, as the weeks and the months go on, its daily path moves across the sky, little towards the north, a little further north each day.
Yeah, there's a good song there by Graham Connors. I like it. Tell us about the James Webb Telescope. Now, we've talked about this for a fair while now, but astronomers like yourself are very happy with it.
Well, if you count the number of prayers that were said when this was launched, you know that he's sitting up there saying, "A job well done." Look, what can you say about this thing? I mean, here's a telescope that's been in production on and off for over 20 years now and gone through so many changes and suspensions that it's up there at the moment. $10 billion telescope has just been turned on for the first time. And the images coming back are absolutely knockout. Mm. They're better than anyone had expected. They've opened the petals up. The mirror is wide open. It's like a flower when you open it. When a flower opens up, these petals were folded for, to be compact so it can launch it. But being put in where it is, the position it is right now, a million K from Earth, so it's in a very cold position. And it's got us back to the sun. The sun shield is stopping any sunlight hitting the telescope because being an infrared telescope, you don't want any heat on it because it's designed to pick heat up.
Yep.
And that's what it's doing now. So over the next few weeks, and I'd say into maybe around June, I think they'll turn this on and kickstart it and get it working. With this telescope, it's going to revolutionise astronomy as much as the Hubble telescope did in 1990. But this is going to do a little bit more than that. It's going to be 10 times more powerful and probably 1,000 times more sensitive. We're going to see the first stars that were ever born. We're going to be able to probe galaxies that don't exist anymore. And we may even find evidence for ET, if he's out there. This telescope marks a watershed. It's a brand new starting point.
Mm.
It marks the onset of what's going to be termed this decade, the decade of the giant telescope.
And see, this is the thing. The better our technology becomes, it's getting harder for ET to hide.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't realise that a meteorite had fallen in WA and they've got drones and AI hunting for the darn thing. Why have you got to get AI involved? Can't you just get old-fashioned trackers into it?
Well, look, if you grab any meteorite and throw it in your backyard, I defy you to go and find it. It just wouldn't because it looks like any other rock. But what they've been doing is something very, very interesting over in Western Australia there. And what they've been doing is using technology, using, basically a drone that's fitted with artificial intelligence. And this is an amazing story from the West Australian Science and Technology Centre. They've watched a meteorite come in through the sky. It's been reported on a website called Fireball. I think it's called Fireball, something like that. And these tell you when these big asteroids or big meteors are coming through. This one has come over the Nullarbor Plain. It's hit the ground. So they got their little drone out and they sent it over there. Now, this has got a video on it, video inside. It's capable of scanning all around the area, all around the ground where it's supposed to have fallen. And using artificial intelligence, it has algorithms in there. It's got little algorithms that scan every image, every piece of rock there, and work out if there's any heat coming from it, which identifies the meteorite straight away, and it'll tell you whether that's the real deal or not. So within a few hours, or within an hour or so of this thing falling, they pick one up and they've got it there and they've got a photograph of it. So the old way of doing it was waiting for a meteorite to fall or reports of one to fall to ground there and getting a large walking party organised. But, you know, that's hit and miss because you've got to be walking. You've got to know what you're looking for.
Yeah.
a pile of rock, well, a little rock in a pile of rocks, not easy to try and find that. But this one's using new technology now. God knows how this works. I would love to know. But see, the reason we want to do that is because we need to know as much as we can about asteroids. We need to know as much as we can about the bits that break off to become meteors that hit the ground, or meteorites. But inside them, you've got things like platinum, zinc, maybe zircon, gold, uranium, who knows? But we do know that they're made of cobalt as well. Now, cobalt is something we need here, because that's used in modern batteries. You know how many batteries we use around the world every year?
We eat them just about, don't we?
We do, yeah. We throw them in the bin and it's a waste. But there you go. New technology coming into force now to try and find meteorites.
There'll be a brand new series on Foxtel called Outback Meteorite Hunters. If you've got this drone technology, that means it's wide open for anyone to lay claim to a meteorite. And, of course, they want to use it to make money rather than scientific research.
Yep.
David, how are you going to do this one, mate? Scientists figured out how humans could breathe in space. That's not a misprint.
This is a strange story. Probably one of the strange stories I've come across.
Yeah.
I don't understand it because I'm not a chemist, but it's all about cyanobacteria. Now, these are little bugs that inhabit society. They're in the air all the time. They're probably all around you and I at the moment. I've been washing myself fairly frequently now. Capable of taking carbon dioxide, which is what the main atmosphere of Mars is, 98% carbon dioxide. And it's capable of turning it into oxygen in a chemical process or a natural way that this bacteria can do that. And what they've been doing now, scientists have been reproducing the Martian atmosphere. And by introducing this cyanobacteria, they found that it can actually turn part of the carbon dioxide into breathable oxygen.
Oh, that's amazing for the Red Planet. If only they knew about this for the Ben Affleck movie.
Good luck. Yeah. Yeah.
They could have incorporated that in there. I know we did the whole potato farm thing and, you know, he was able to create his own atmosphere, but, oh, I tell you what, using bacteria, I mean, bacteria last forever.
Yeah, well, that's right, you know, and they've even suggested this bacteria could be sent to Mars ahead of time.
Yeah.
And dumped on the planet there. It may produce enough to sustain a colony, we don't know. Isn't it amazing what we're finding out, the things we can do now that we couldn't do 5, 10, maybe 20 years ago?
Oh, look, they say we can geo-terraform planets now. We have the ability to do that. Why not geo-terraform the human body and maybe, hey, this is, you know, going a bit wild here, but re-engineer DNA to be able to live a life in space where you don't need to carry all this oxygen and all this stuff. If we actually can grow it within ourselves, I mean, that changes our species totally.
Well, look, down the track, I'm a firm believer, and I know that you'll stretch your imagination sometimes as well, and it's a good thing to be able to do that, but I'm a firm believer that anything the human mind can conceive, think of, I think one day we could make possible.
Yeah. Oh, look, we thought up, you know, handheld camcorders on the Star Trek Enterprise. They become mobile phones, so, hey, anything's possible.
I was going through Marketplace the other day looking for some bits and pieces, and I found a cassette player there with cassette tapes. And it was called a vintage music, you know, something or other. Some young person put it on there. It's vintage now, you know. I still use it. I still play them.
I've got cassettes still working at my place. What are you talking about? It's not vintage yet.
You've got an 8-track in your car. Everyone knows that.
Yeah, move on. Finally, David, NASA's launching a space station for the moon, so it's not enough to have one around the Earth. The ISS is going to go and we're going to have another one in the moon. Why would you bother?
Well, they're going to need it there because we're going to be going to the moon. They're going to go back to the moon. They need this as part of the Artemis program that they're doing now. The Artemis program is a return to the moon. The rocket's already built. It's on the launch pad. They've got their astronauts all ready to go. And they're going to build what's called a lunar gateway, critical part of the Artemis mission. It's going to be in orbit around the moon. It's going to be a dropping-off point where we can go to unload, refresh, and then go straight down to the surface there. It's a place where astronauts are on the moon. People working there can come back from time to time to fly up there and just to bit of R&R, I guess. Won't be built any earlier than November 2024. Well, that's the projected finishing date. I think it'll go a little bit longer, though. But it's for crewed missions to fly to the moon, and this is the Orion spacecraft they're building now. Look, this would have been built a little bit earlier on, but litigation by by the co-founder of Amazon has pushed this back to 2025, they're saying, because he was suing NASA. Jeff Bezos was a little bit cranky with NASA because they gave the contract to launch astronauts to Elon Musk.
You know what? So what? It doesn't matter who gets us into space or gets this technology going. You know what? There should be some way to evenly divide the spoils and costs between, you know, 3 or 4 billionaires on the planet, you know?
Well, that's why they call it space out there, Bill. There's a lot of it. Yeah. You know, it's enough to go around.
Yeah, Bezos can have his bit, Musk can have his, and Branson can have his bit, and you and I can have our bit, and no one's going to fight.
Yeah, we can too, but this is going to be built, going to be there, and I'll tell you what, I'll make a prediction, see how close we go. There are 5, maybe 7 astronauts being trained at the moment to go back there. The Orion capsule can hold that many. I think 4 or 5 will go. But I think when they do go back to the moon, which is very, very close now, the Americans, when they go back there and that capsule lands on the surface there, on the surface of the moon, and that door opens, I'd like to see this happen. 2 people step out at the same time. The first coloured person, the person of colour,
yep,
to do that, and the first woman.
Yeah, fantastic.
I reckon that'd be a great gesture for both sides of the coin, you know.
I think you do. I think you're right there, mate. And that'll make headline news everywhere. And of course, backing them, William Shatner, perfect.
I'll bet you a cassette tape.
All right, David. Check out davidreneke.com. Linked up now at our socials, or just keep following our podcast too. David, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Booker. We'll talk to you next week. Bye bye.